again, welcome to the show, a Juno afternoon. Today, I'll be hosting. My name is Jamie Waste. We've got a fine show coming your way. First, we're going to be talking about starting a childcare business with our guest, Talia Keller. Going to learn more about the Juno Raptor Center. Daniel Martin will be here to highlight an upcoming blues dance class. And we're going to talk to Colette Costa about the not-so-silent screening of Peter Pan at the Goldtown Theater. Also, an update from Eagle Crest. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More coming up at 3 o'clock on KTOO News Juno. If you missed the show live at 3 p.m., it's also available at 4 on KRNN.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Rosebud Sioux Tribal Council met this week to discuss plans for preventing fatal dog attacks. As Jim Kent reports, the council's goal is to act with respect toward any dogs on the South Dakota Reservation, as well as owners and the tribal membership as a whole.
The death of Julia Charging Whirlwind from a dog attack last weekend has been a blow to the Swiftbird community and the entire Rosebud Sioux Reservation. The longtime counselor at the Spotted Tail Crisis Center was a mother and grandmother, as well as a vital member of her tribe. Rosebud Sioux Tribal Council Representative Wayne Frederick says the goal of the tribal leadership is to act rationally about an incident that has torn at the hearts of many.
The Rosebud Sioux Tribe is handling this situation in the most respectful manner that we can. It is not a killing spree. We are just trying to get control of the feral dog population.
As a result of Charging Whirlwind's death, the Rosebud Sioux Tribal Council has reaffirmed its animal control ordinances. Rosebud Sioux Tribal Police and Game Fish and Park officers have the right to enter communities and attempt to identify feral dogs. If a dog's owner cannot be located, it will either be taken to an impound location if healthy and without an owner, or put down if found to be sick or aggressive. This process is scheduled to be ongoing for 60 to 90 days. Wayne Frederick advises other reservations to develop ordinances for the benefit and safety of their tribal members, as well as members of the dog and horse nations. I'm Jim Kent.
The Fairbanks 4 case in Alaska is in waiting mode, says Shirley Lee with the Native Justice Task Force. Lee gave an update on the case Tuesday during the Tanana Chiefs Conference annual gathering in Fairbanks. The Alaska Innocence Project is working to overturn guilty convictions of the Fairbanks four men imprisoned for a 1997 beating death. Lee says it's been nearly 2 years since the project filed post-conviction reliefs. She says it's taken much time and resources and announced added help.
There are new warriors involved in our fight. The international law firm of Dorsey and Whitney have joined the case as co-counsel, pro bono.
Lee says they've also reached out to the Department of Justice to get involved. Interior Native leaders are among those supporting the Fairbanks Four, while the family of the man who died believe they're guilty. Lee says the next trial date is set for October. An Alaska Native village in the interior is the destination for a herd of bison from Canada. Wood bison have been extinct in Alaska for more than a century. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
This month's planned shipment of about 100 wood bison to the Shagaluk area is one of the final steps in a long-pursued project to reintroduce the animals to interior Alaska.
It's going to be interesting.
Shagaluk resident Arnold Hamilton is a member of the local Fish and Game Advisory Committee who's worked on the project for several years.
Getting them out here is going to be
The seed stock of wood bison are scheduled to be flown to Shagaluk in converted shipping containers beginning March 22nd. They'll initially be held in two enclosures constructed by Hamilton and other locals. Alaska Department of Fish and Game spokeswoman Kathy Harms says spring is the ideal time to do the transplant.
Because once the animals drop their calves, that kind of anchors them to a piece of habitat.
Harms points to good bison habitat, community support, and a lack of pending development projects with why Shagaluk was selected as the reintroduction site. If wood bison flourish, Shagaluk's Hamilton expects they could help preserve the area's moose population locals depend on for subsistence.
We wouldn't kill all the moose. See, we'll have something else.
Bison are a threatened species, but a special federal ruling classifies wood bison in Alaska as a non-essential experimental population, a status that allows the animals to be hunted. I'm Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, weaving pathways across the digital divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste, and in the studio right now is Talia Keller. And Talia is with the Association for the Education of Young Children, correct?
Yes.
Including the young child that you brought to the studio today.
Yes.
Not in the studio with a microphone right now, but being taken care of by somebody on the staff here at KTOO.
Yeah.
So welcome to K2, welcome to the studio, and you're here to talk about an open house, which is the topic concerns starting a child care business. So why don't you just start by mentioning the open house and what it is, and we'll go from there.
All right. This open house is called Getting Into the Business of Caring. You can stop by AUIC at 3100 Channel Drive, which is in the Juneau Empire Building, and sit down with our staff there, including myself, and talk about what it takes to start a child care business and the ways that we can help you through SRED and AUIC help you throughout that process, the ways that we can support.
So the other organization you just mentioned, SRED, so yes, they're a partner in this. Do you want to describe how the two organizations work together in supporting child care businesses?
Absolutely. AUIC is an organization that supports families and child care providers here in Southeast. And then SRED is a child care resource and referral service. So a lot of AUIC's trainings happen through the SRED service. So we provide training to child care providers. We also provide supports to families looking for child care and supports for early educators.
The open house, is this something that you do annually? Is there a special reason why you're having the open house?
Actually, yes, we do it every month. So we have this, it's actually on the third Thursday of every month at noon and at our office at AUIC. And it's just a way for us to provide support for anyone who might be interested, even just thinking about maybe possibly staying home with their kids and opening some sort of childcare. It's very, very needed here. We're actually in a child care crisis here in Southeast Alaska, and especially Juneau. Speaking from my own experience, I have my one-year-old son here today because my child care is not available at all to take him on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. It took me a month and a half to find one opening in the entire town, and that was basically, she took him out of pity, even though she's retiring. So we're in a very bad crisis as far as child care goes. And so we really need people to be opening, and that, this is just a way that we can support that.
And is that the crisis, the lack of child care services today, has that been the norm for a while, or is this like a cyclical thing where it comes and sometimes there's enough and then it drops?
As far as I know, this is the worst that it has been in decades throughout Southeast Alaska. I'm new back to Alaska myself, but it's definitely a shortage right now, especially.
That's a serious thing to have a shortage of. Is there any sense of for why that would be the case?
I'm not really positive on that. It might have something to do with rent prices here in Juneau. I'm not sure on that one.
So for somebody who's interested, for starters, the open house. So what somebody comes to the open house, what is it that they will be made available for them? What will they learn? What do you offer during the open house itself?
So we sit down with them basically and find out where they are in the process. Some people have already contacted licensing and they have certain specific questions, like they need to work on their policies and procedures or something like that. That's just a support that we can help them walk through that. They might not know, you know, the next person to contact in their process. Or some people are just like, well, I've kind of thought about it. I'm having a hard time finding childcare myself. So, you know, sometimes that's a really great way to find childcare for yourself and be able to spend time with your kids is to open one yourself. So we meet them wherever they're at, and then we kind of have a packet that we go through, show them the ways that we can support them with AEYC, give them the numbers that they need to kind of start the licensing process, and kind of a step-by-step guide of how to open a childcare.
Mm-hmm. So how did you get started with this? How did you get involved?
I actually recently moved back to Alaska, and we moved back to Wrangell, where I grew up, and there were not a lot of opportunities for me, and I had a new baby, 2 months old. So I actually went through the licensing process myself, and I got licensed. I had a very positive experience, and but the day after I got licensed, my husband got an excellent job offer here. So I never actually opened, but I went through the licensing process, and during that process, I worked a lot with AEYC, using them as a support and just so much information that they have to help you through the process. So I contacted them after I was here and was hired on. They just so happened to have an opening, and with my experience in child development and just having gone through the process and going through the process of trying desperately to find reliable childcare myself, I kind of seemed to be a great fit.
Mm-hmm. So we're focused a little bit today about the open house that's coming up and starting childcare businesses. So the two organizations, the Association for the Education of Young Children and THRED, I'm assuming there are other services or levels of services that they also provide. I think you touched on a few of them earlier, but you want to just expound a little bit on that?
Yeah, AEYC, people might know of them through the Best Beginnings Dolly Parton Imagination Library or the Parents as Teachers programs. AEYC does a lot of advocacy for young children, kind of works as a voice for young children and early educators throughout Alaska. And THRED is kind of uses the AEYC for their child care resource and referral services. So, you know, parents looking for child care can call AEYC and be directed to whatever openings might be and fitting their needs as far as age and what they're looking for in a child care. And child care providers can also give them their information, how many openings they might have, so that to link those providers with parents.
It can be extraordinarily stressful not having child care or adequate child care or reliable child care. So this is a very important service. So thank you for your work on this. And maybe before we wrap it up, just maybe remind people about the open house and the details and the particulars.
Yeah, people can stop by THRED's open house to learn more about services and supports that we can provide, supplies, and ways to support their business, their new child care business on Thursday, March 19th, which is tomorrow, from noon to 1 at the AEYC, which is in the Juneau Empire Building.
Anything else you want to make sure that the audience is aware of today before we wrap it up?
I just look forward to seeing them tomorrow.
So final question. Was that your son out there?
Yes.
Name of your son?
Jack.
So Jack's been taken care of for this interview back in the business office here at KTOO. So thanks to those folks as well.
Yes. Big thank you.
Talia, nice meeting you. Thank you for coming in.
Mm-hmm.
When the light begins. begins to shine. Rooster crows at morning time. Start your day with rhythm and rhyme. Swing it, baby, swing. Dance your way into your clothes. How it happens, no one knows. From your head down to your toes. Swing it, baby, swing. They say it do not mean a thing if it does not have that swing. Great days are a sunny thing when your heart begins to sing. Cowboys do it, cowgirls too. Swing with your lady, swing it while you croon a tune. Swing it, baby, swing.
Next on a Juneau Afternoon, we have two representatives from the Juneau Raptor Center, Janet Capito and Pat Bach are both here. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Thank you for your efforts on behalf of the Juneau Raptor Center. I'm guessing you've both been involved for a long time.
I've been involved for approximately 20 years now, so I've been doing it for quite a while. Pat, a little bit shorter, not too much longer.
So, 18, maybe.
18, yeah.
And it's an entirely volunteer organization?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The only paid employees we have is during the summer, we hire two people to take care of the enclosure up at the top of the tram. We have an eagle up there that is housed up there all summer. And that's the only paid employees that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only for the summer. So.
So why don't you just briefly describe the Juneau Raptor Center for people who
okay.
may not be familiar with it.
Okay. I have a couple of things written down here. It was started in 1987, and originally we only cared for raptors. And if you don't know what a raptor is, it's a little bit different than every other bird. Raptors have very sharp, long talons and a sharp, curved beak, whereas other birds have a longer, pointed beak. And their talons aren't nearly as long. And the raptors always catch their food with their feet. And other birds don't do that. It's only with their mouths. They can hold down something with their foot, but don't actually pick it up and carry it.
Are all raptors considered birds of prey? Or?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's one of the other defining...
Yeah, I guess you can say that. You know, that is one of the terms they use, but... When you think about it, a robin goes after a worm, and that's, you know, a worm
yeah.
is a prey. So
there you go.
It's not a good definition
right.
of a bird of prey or a raptor. So.
Okay. So it started primarily with raptors?
Correct.
And has evolved?
Yes. That we care for all wild birds. I need to say that. We do not do domestic birds at all. This is, you know, pet birds that people have, parakeets, parrots, things like that. We do not do anything about that.
So how does this work? How does a bird end up at the Juneau Raptor Center?
One of us has a pager, which I currently have, and a person calls our office number, and that gives the person our pager number, and they call us, and we're on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then we try to get some help for that bird as soon as possible. One of us goes out, like Pat and I were out on a bird call this morning. We hiked, 2 miles to get an eagle this morning. So, and another member this morning picked up an owl that was hit by a car out the road. And I just sent another member out after a small bird that was injured. So it just, it's our busier time now.
I was going to say, is this a big day or is this?
Yeah, it's a big day. Yeah.
So I know we want to talk about the open house in, in a moment, but tell us more. Today, you got a call about it, about an eagle. And so what did you do?
Well, it was on North Douglas, and we hiked out there. And these folks were nice enough to stay with the bird. And so they directed us to exactly where the bird was. And he was an easy capture. By easy, I mean didn't hardly struggle at all. The bird is basically semi-conscious right now. We're not sure what's going on with that bird, but we think he might have been feeding on a carcass of a dog that was left on the side of the road up at on Eagle Crest Road, because we got another call about a bird yesterday. Same scenario. This bird is semi-conscious, and that bird is now in Sitka. We don't have a facility right now that we can actually exercise birds after they need, after they've had their initial care and they need to exercise. So we have to send all of our birds over to Sitka, and they usually take care of them. So I'm not sure what's going on with that bird, if it's still alive or not.
And then is there, what kind of, how do you assess in the field or when you get the bird back to your center here, how do you assess the, you know, are we sending this bird on to Sitka or is there no hope for this bird or?
Basically, you know, if you find an injury that is, you know, really bad, like a broken leg or wing or something, we normally get it x-rayed. And if it's in a spot that could possibly be repaired and the bird could be released, then we'll send it to Sitka. If it's bad, really bad, then it's euthanized.
Okay.
So,
all right. So you had a list of things you were going to talk about. Let's get back to the list.
Well, I've kind of gone through a lot of different things so far. In that we, you know, we have a small core of, a very small core of volunteers, and several of us are getting on in airs. So we do need more volunteers, and anybody who's interested could definitely call or get on our website is the best thing. Pat, can you give that website?
Yes, it's www.junoraptorcenter.org.
So for a prospective volunteer, what are you looking for? Or what do they need? Obviously, they care for birds or enjoy the outdoors and what have you, but are there any specific requirements for a volunteer?
No. I am a nurse, and so I did have some medical training in that, but not with birds. But it's not necessary to have any type of medical training. Most people don't, and we just train people. And, yeah, I know a lot more about birds than I started out as knowing, but I didn't know nearly all of that. And you gain experience over time as to what to look for in a bird. Like with these birds, the most likely were poisoned, so we did give them, we put a tube down their throat and give them some medication to kind of detoxify that poison, if that's the scenario, which, you know, seems like it, but I'm not sure.
And so it's 24/7, somebody's got a pager.
Correct.
Correct. And then how many currently volunteers in the Juneau area are part of this effort?
What? People who would go out on bird calls, maybe 5 or 6, and that's all. So it used to be a lot larger, but, you know, people move and things like that, so or decide to do other things. So.
And seasonally, I'm assuming that it's busier in the spring or the summer and then quieter in the winter.
Yes. And we often get calls about baby birds that have fallen out of the nest. And it's best really to leave the bird alone and just let it, the parents take care of it. It does much better when the parents are taking care of it than if we pick it up, unless it's in a dangerous situation like a person has cats or something and they go outside, well, you know, the bird is going to have to be picked up so that it's, you know, can have a better chance of surviving and being released. And that's our main goal, is to be released.
Mm-hmm. Little bit of a misconception at times about baby birds is that if you touch them, the parents will automatically reject them. Most birds don't have that defined sense of smell. So if you're able to get a bird back in the nest, that's always a plus.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, one thing I did want to say is we also do education programs. They're free. You can call, again, either call our office or get on our website, and you can request a program. We go into schools. We bring an education bird into the school and talk about that particular bird. So that is one thing that we do. So you can do that, or you can call us anytime for that. We've been doing several education programs in the schools recently.
And you mentioned one of your star birds. I don't know if it's the same bird every year, but up at the tram. That's a huge, gift to the community, if you will, what you folks do up there every year.
Yes, yeah. Right. She doesn't go on it to education programs. She's not trained to do that. Mm-hmm. She's not been handled in that particular way, but we do have an adult bald eagle that we take to programs, and we can take it into a school. We were at Juno Charter School just recently with the eagle. So,
mm-hmm. I know that over the years, every now and then there's a picture in the Empire or what have some of a bird being released, mm-hmm. and I always think that it's got to be quite the moment for people who've invested the time and energy to get a bird back to the point where they could actually be introduced back into the wild.
Yes, and again, the reason we haven't had releases is because we have lost our flight enclosure. The folks whose property it was on moved, and so we have, you know, we've been looking, but so far haven't been able to find anything within our very limited price range. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we've been trying, so, because it'd be nice to be able to keep the birds here and be able to release them here.
So the open house, let's talk a little bit about the open house, make sure people know about that.
Yes, we have, it's called our annual meeting open house. It's on Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 21st of March. And our meeting, which is open to the public, is from 11 to 12. And then our open house is from 12 to 1:30. And at that time, we will have all of our education birds there. And you can come up fairly close to the birds and talk to their handlers and ask questions. We'll have some education material there that you can look at, things for kids to color. We also have some door prizes that we give just to kids. When they come and sign in, they can fill out a little ticket. And if they happen to be there when we call their name or number, then, you know, we give them a door prize.
That's this Saturday, correct?
That'll be at the Nugget Mall, mm-hmm. where the mm-hmm. old former Alaska Outfitters was located. Totally free. Everybody's welcome. Light refreshments. You can learn mm-hmm. about becoming a member or volunteering and just find out about what we do.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So that's Saturday at the Nugget Mall. Mm-hmm. The membership meeting is 11 to 12, and then the open house part is 12 to 1 or something
noon
like
that?
Noon to 1:30. Great. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that you wanted to convey to the audience today about the Juno Raptor Center and or the open house?
I just think it's a wonderful organization to have, and it's a, you know, people rely on us to call them and talk to them and help, you know, birds because they are concerned about it. And we do try our best. I know we've had several calls about a raven out near McDonald's with a broken wing. And I know I have tried to catch that bird, and several other members have tried to catch. And that little guy can run under cars, which I can't do. And he runs pretty darn fast, and we have not been able to catch him. But he's obviously surviving. I'm sure people are feeding him and things. So Whenever I get a page about it, I just normally say, until he gets weak enough, we can't do a thing about it, you know. So
between the two of you, 35 years of volunteering on behalf of the Jenna Rapper Center?
Just about, yeah.
Well, good for you both. Nice contribution to the community. So Janet Capito and Pat Bach, thank you very much, both of you, for coming into the studio today.
Well, we appreciate you having us on. We really do.
Our pleasure.
I hope you can come by and see us on Saturday.
Yeah.
This is Bird Note. These distinctive hoots signal the presence of a sumo wrestler of a bird. It's Blakiston's fish owl. Blakiston, because its existence was recorded by the English naturalist Thomas Blakiston. And fish owl, because it hunts fish. Standing on the edge of a stream, sometimes in the shallows, it watches intently, eyes fixed on the water. Then with a sudden jump forward, wings upraised, it plunges its talons into a fish and pulls it onto the bank. Sometimes, a fish as large as a salmon. This massive bird is the largest owl in the world. Tawny brown, a female Blakiston's fish owl, is the larger of the sexes and may stand 28 inches tall, weighing in at over 10 pounds. That's the same weight as a bald eagle. Compared with our largest familiar owl, the great horned, the Blakiston's is 6 inches taller and nearly three times as heavy. No other owl approaches its prodigious girth. But the Blakiston's fish owl is endangered. It's found only in wooded areas in the east of Japan's second largest island, Hokkaido, and in small areas in adjacent Russia and China. Future preservation of forest and river habitats in these regions will be crucial to the survival of this one-of-a-kind owl.
And here is the writer's almanac for Wednesday. It's the 18th of March, 2015. It's the birthday of John Updike, born Reading, Pennsylvania, 1932. Father, high school teacher, his mother wanted to be a writer. Updike said, one of my earliest memories is of seeing her at her desk. I admired the typewriter, eraser, the boxes of clean paper, and I remember the brown envelopes that stories would go off in and come back in. He went to Harvard. He joined the staff of the Harvard Lampoon as a cartoonist, but ended up writing as well, got an art scholarship, studied at Oxford, but came back to America to be a staff writer at the New Yorker magazine. He published his first books when he was just 25, a book of poems and a book of short stories, The Same Door, and a novel, The Poorhouse Fair. He was married with small children, didn't care to live in New York City, moved up to Massachusetts to Ipswich, and had great success in his early years. In 1960, he published Rabbit Run, the first of his Rabbit Angstrom quadrology, and at the same time underwent a spiritual crisis, he said, when his spirit could scarcely breathe. He said, to give myself brightness and air, I read Karl Barth and fell in love with other men's wives. He wrote in an office above a restaurant in Ipswich. He wrote about 3 pages every morning after breakfast, sometimes more, published about 1 book a year, took Sundays off for church, published more than 60 books in his lifetime, including 28 novels. Updike said, at the point where you get your writerly vocation, you diminish your receptivity to experience. Being able to write becomes a kind of shield, a way of hiding, a way of too instantly transforming pain into honey. It's the birthday of the poet Stefan Mallarmé, born in Paris, 1842, the poet Wilfred Owen, Shropshire, England, 1893. It's the birthday of George Plimpton, editor of the Paris Review for 50 years, born in New York City, 1927. and it's the 25th anniversary of the Gardner heist, the largest art theft in American history. 1990, a pair of thieves disguised as Boston police officers broke into the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum shortly after 1 o'clock in the morning. It was the day after St. Patrick's Day. They told the young guards they were responding to a disturbance. They were in the museum for 81 minutes and made off with 13 works of art, paintings and drawings by Vermeer, Manet, Degas, Rembrandt, paintings which have never been recovered, and the loss to the museum was estimated at more than $300 million. The statute of limitations for prosecution has now passed, and the museum hopes that the thieves will step forward and return the art. Here's a poem for today by Tom Hennen, Spring Follows Winter Once More. Lying here in the tall grass, where it's so soft, is this what it is to go home? Into the earth of worms and black smells, with a larch tree gathering sunlight in the spring afternoon, and the gates of paradise open just enough to let out a flock of geese. A poem by Tom Hennen, Spring Follows Winter Once More, from Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Put the fun in fundraising for Big Brothers Big Sisters Bowl for Kids' Sake. Register your team, collect donations, and celebrate at the Big Bowling Party Saturday, April 4th. This event will help match and support more kids with Big Brothers and Big Sisters in Juneau. You'll have a chance to win some great prizes, including Alaska Airlines tickets, helicopter adventures, theater tickets, and much more. Sign up online at bbbsak.org/bowl or call Big Brothers Big Sisters at 586-3350.
This is Jim Strader. On behalf of Bartlett Regional Hospital, I'd like to invite you to attend the Juneau Community Health Fair on March 28th. It's a great way for you to get important health information from local health and safety providers and to take advantage of free basic screenings. You can also get high-quality, low-cost blood tests. The health fair is a good place to develop healthy goals and make proactive changes in your daily life. Saturday, March 28th, 9 till noon at Nugget Mall. The Juneau Community Health Fair, sponsored by Bartlett Regional Hospital.
Spring is near and Folk Festival's coming, so it's time to celebrate and polish those dance moves at the Equinox Barn Dance, Saturday, March 21st, 7:30 at St. Anne's Parish Hall downtown. Impromptu with Mike Sicarius on Hammer Dulcimer, Ann Fuller, John Church, and Beth Leibowitz will play lively dance tunes, and Odette Edgar will teach and call conference square dances. No experience or partners are necessary. Free for Vista and JV's discounts for students and seniors sponsored by the Juno Folk Dancers. Barn Dance this Saturday.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, offering coffee break service for the office, delivering fresh roasted coffees, brewing equipment, and beverage supplies to offices and businesses around Southeast. Information at heritagecoffee.com.
Well, we were hoping to speak with Daniel Martin this afternoon about the Blues Dance Workshop and related activities coming up March 27th through the 29th. Daniel has not managed to get here into the studio, so that's unfortunate. But I'm going to take just a minute to talk about the events nonetheless. So this is March 27th through the 29th. This whole thing is called Blues Fever. It's fusion dance lessons and live music. There's activities scheduled starting on Friday afternoon, running through Saturday, through Friday night, through Saturday, and on into Sunday. We have what? Time to go to Colette?
Yeah.
Already? I was going to promote the blues event.
He's here.
He's here. So we'll talk to we will talk to Daniel in a minute. So in the meantime, Colette Costa has joined us in the studio with a guest.
Joe.
Colette and Joe. Got the mics up here?
You get that one. Hi, how are you? This is Joe. He's actually going to be one of our musicians. So.
One of your musicians for?
Well, that is a very good question. Thank you for asking. Well, we are going to do a, over at Gold Town Theater, we do a great series. We call it the Not So Silent Films. It's where we show classic silent films. And just to bring it into a modern spin, we have a live band or musician that does a live score to the film as you're watching it. So it really adds a much more exciting, interactive element to the whole thing. And really, they feed off each other and just brings it to life. So this coming week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we are going to be showing the 1924 film called Peter Pan, which is kind of famous. A lot of people have sort of heard about it. And this one was kind of co-produced by James Barry, who wrote the book, so it kind of has his stamp of approval all over it. And Joe and Jesse are here from Colorado. They've been teaching marimba workshops. And why don't you tell them a little bit about the process you guys have been doing to score this film?
Yeah. So Jesse and I were invited up to Juno. We're from Boulder, Colorado. But we're invited up for 3.5 months to teach Zimbabwean marimba with no idea we'd do a silent film. But we got in contact with Colette, and usually the Zimbabwean marimbas are played in groups of seven in a whole choir from soprano to bass. But it's going to be just her and I because there's so many different things going on in a film that you want the flexibility of few people over the big sound of many.
Oh, we have a tiny space, too.
And the tiny space.
Marimbas are kind of on the large side. It's not like a xylophone. Kind of made that assumption, and boy, was I wrong.
No, you want to see the screen, too, is the thing.
Have you scored a film before?
I have not scored a film before.
See, you come to Alaska and all kinds of opportunities.
You can never know what'll happen.
And are you guys? I don't even know what they're doing. I know what a marimba sounds like. I know it's going to be very lively and fun. But are you guys going to be incorporating sound effects into it and hits? I mean, is it? It's not just going to be song played over a movie.
It's going, the songs, all the themes are worked in with the movie. And there are two sound effects, which I'll just tell you right now.
Oh, are you going to give it away already?
No,
don't do that. Can't do that. Gotta go
okay,
to the movie.
I'll give one of them. And this is, I told I would practice this. And it goes like this. That's one of them.
And you're doing the sound.
I'm doing that sound effect.
That's a teaser.
So we have two wonderful things here. We've got a classic vintage
black and beautifully shot.
So We'll get back to the scoring in the maroon, but talk about the movie, the film
the
here.
The film itself it was directed by Barnin was his name. He also directed the original Beau Geste with Gary Cooper, which is another beautiful 20s silent film. This was made in 1924. James Barry did not want it. He didn't think it could be made into a movie. And by then they had kind of perfected a lot of early special effects, mostly making people fly, doing back screen, that kind of stuff. And they really kind of talked him into the process. He handpicked the woman who plays Peter Pan. Her name is Betty Bronson. She was after that, she was 19 when they made the film, and she became quite a big silent film star after that. And it's just a crazy, it's a wonderful adaptation. It's very much taken right from the book. It's beautifully shot. It's got mermaids and pirates and crocodiles, and it's really not. It's a great film for kids and families, but the whole evening itself is really. It's awesome for adults, too, which is why we're doing a 9 p.m. show on Friday. So the shows will be tomorrow. I can't believe it's tomorrow. Thursday at 7 p.m., Friday at 9 p.m., and a Saturday afternoon matinee at 4. And we have tickets at Gold Town Box Office, at Rainy Retreat Books, or you can get them online.
So I just watched the little bit of a clip that you have and was struck. So I'm thinking 1924, okay, I get it, black and white. But I'm thinking about special effects and what have you. So how was this movie received in its time?
Oh, it was huge. It was huge. It was blocks, lines and lines around the block. I mean, it played for like 6 months, I think I read. It was like the number one box office hit for weeks and weeks and weeks. It was, of course, you know, the book hadn't been written that much longer before. So it was a fairly new book. And it was, of course, hugely popular. And the film itself was a terrific adaptation. It was a giant success. It made somebody a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, 1924 is, you're kind of at the height of silent movie making. So things like special effects and lighting and cinematography were really at their height for usefulness and for effectiveness. And so this isn't like some staticky, jumpy, you know, camera not moving film. It's very, very energetic.
Yeah, the 5 minutes that I watched, I just thought, wow, there's a lot. I mean, the whole fantasy notion of Peter Pan is already a lot packed in, and they haven't even gone to Neverland yet in what I saw.
Yeah.
So what gave you the idea of saying we're going to score this independent of the, I assume, piano music or whatever else might have come along with it?
Well, this is something that's been done in theaters for quite a long time. We started doing it here at Gold Town about 2 years ago. It was an idea that I've always loved silent films, and it's really difficult to get people to watch a black and white movie, forget about a silent movie. So I thought, well, what if we chum the waters? And usually we do it with local musicians, which we have a plethora of. But whenever I see an opportunity, like these guys being here, they're very flexible, very talented. I can throw the idea at them, work with them through the process, and you know, try to engage both the musicians and the audience in it. And it's really an amazing thing to see people be so involved in a silent movie and invested in it, mostly due to the music, because it really draws you in and paints the picture of it. It's incredible.
So back to the musicians here and the scoring. Biggest challenge in doing this? Biggest surprise in taking this project on?
I would say, for me, the biggest challenge was I came in with so much excitement, and as you said, you saw a little clip, and so much happens in it, and I wanted to get something different that had the perfect emotion for it on every, 15-second shot. So we have a pretty intricate first 10 minutes, which we took the first month of practice to do. The challenge, I would say the biggest challenge, was then to sort of lengthen that out. And then now coming back in the past week and seeing the wider scored parts and letting it kind of roll, and you get sucked into it. And the marimbas are very rhythmic, so you got a lot of the mesmerizing rhythms going. And then you forget about the music, and you're just in the movie in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually, for me, the most amazing thing, and it happens every time. it starts, the musicians are there, you're basically, you're so conscious of listening to musicians while you're watching a movie, and then at right about, it happens so quickly, at about a 5 or 10 minute mark, I watch audiences watch the movie, and you see them, their gaze just goes up, and it's permanently affixed, and they've completely forgotten that there are live musicians there, and yet because it's so ambient, it just totally ties you into the whole thing. I hate being all, you know, hippy-dippy, but it becomes kind of transcendental. It's pretty crazy. But I highly recommend. It's great for kids because you don't have to listen to dialogue, so they can talk their way through the whole, what's going on, Mom? Read me the, they can't read the cue card. Someone can read it to them. The music is cranked up that you can't interrupt the movie experience with that. It's really and it's such a throwback to how people used to see movies. You know, they used to respond to the theater and they used to respond to the action on the thing without interrupting dialogue.
And it's a pretty universal film and story. It's in most people's lives growing up. So thank you both for coming
in.
Do you want to just plug the event
one
more time?
Film. We're going to be showing Peter Pan tomorrow at 7 p.m., Friday at 9 p.m., and Saturday at 4 p.m., Gold Town Theater. You can go to goldtownnick.com for tickets or Rainy Retreat Books over on Seward Street. They've got them there.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Daniel Martin, creator of Blues Fever. You got so much packed into this weekend. Tell us about it.
Yeah, there's a whole lot going on the flyer. I really want to encourage people to check out the Facebook page for all the events, because it's Blues Fever. It's a whole weekend of dance lessons and music. I'm bringing up some blues dance instructors, and this is next weekend, so you have some time to clear your schedule and figure out what you're going to go to. What events you can make. It starts off on Friday, March 27th at the Douglas Public Library. I'm partnered up with the library folks and also with UAS, and so we're all collaborating to bring these blues dance instructors to Juneau. The Friday event is 5:30 at the Douglas Public Library. It's totally free, open to everyone. That's a great way to come see what blues dancing, what these guys, Mark and Kelly, our instructors, what they're all about, and make plans for coming to the other events. Saturday, Sunday are the main workshop lessons. That's at the Hangar Ballroom. The complete lesson schedule, again, check out Facebook, or if you're not into Facebook, email me at alaskabluesfusion@gmail.com, and I can put you on my mailing list. Also, the Jack calendar and the KTO calendar have all the events, but there's going to be lessons every day for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's going to be dance events every day, every evening for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We've got live music lined up for those.
So blues dance. People, when they hear the word blues, they hear a certain kind of music.
Right,
so,
B.B. King.
Yeah,
and
us about fusion
Chicago
dance lessons.
Right,
I mean,
what is this all
about?
Right, so I'm throwing all these details at you. What is this really all about? I don't want to get too specific about trying to define what blues is and what fusion is, because part of the beauty of it is kind of the non-specificity. And for me, this approach, it's less about you doing a specific step or specific movements to a specific kind of music, and it's more about an approach to partner dancing. So what you're going to learn from these guys, and what you're going to learn if you come to other events that I do, Alaska Blues Fusion, other lessons and stuff that I'll be doing all year long, is it's about learning an approach to partner dancing that allows you to take your innate creativity, your innate human desire to dance, and do that with a partner to whatever music you like.
Sounds like a whole lot of healthy fun for people, and I'm sorry we don't have enough time to talk a little more in detail, but I'm glad we were able to
have me.
Well, I'm glad we squeezed you in, but just one more real quickly, just how to contact you primarily about these events.
Awesome. Blues Fever, next weekend, 27th, 28th, and 29th. Find it on Facebook. The full schedule is there. If you're not on Facebook, email me, alaskabluesfusion@gmail.com, and I'll get you set up with all the lessons and all the dance.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas.